The West knows this very well. They know that when you couple this spirit with the material strength and logistical support, you have a real existential threat. So ultimately, what Al-Quds Day serves to do globally is really it's an incitement towards resistance. It is a rejection of normalization, is a rejection of the American two-state solution. And this year's Al-Quds Day, I would argue, is unlike any other year that we've seen before, because ultimately the unprecedented violence that we're seeing in Gaza and the West Bank is an indication really of the bankruptcy of the Israeli occupation entity, but also the crossroads of America and the kind of duality that we're seeing and the confusion in their positioning is really showing us that America is at a crossroads with the continuity of Israel moving forward. There is uncertainty on that because ultimately Israel was created as a project. It is the American project in the region to protect Western interests. But right now it is in need, not only is it in need of Western protection, it is jeopardizing Western interests, so to speak.
And some will argue, you know, how much of a price are the West willing to pay for these failures? Mr. Ingram, you know, the idea here that I have an expert on existential risk and I can't ask him about the attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus by Israel, and how could this provocation be the definition of a risk?
Well, I would prefer to use it as to use the word escalation. I don't know if the Israelis are intending to provoke. They could well be, but I don't think we know. There were high-value targets in this embassy, and the Israelis clearly thought that it was worth their while taking out those targets and taking the criticism. They've stepped over several lines here. The first and most obvious is that this is sovereign territory of the Islamic Republic, and that is most certainly a big escalation. It goes against international law, and it would undoubtedly frustrate all of their allies, because none of them, including the Americans, want this war to escalate to the whole region. But it is incredibly dangerous. Deeply irresponsible, and I have no hesitation in using both those descriptions for this murderous act. And whether it was intended as a provocation or not, it will be taken as a provocation. And certainly if the reverse was true and the Iranians had taken out Israelis in an Israeli embassy in an allied country, all hell would break loose, and there would be calls for all sorts of retaliations and massive retaliations. So we do have an inequality here, and I don't envy those decision makers in Tehran who are needing to demonstrate resolve and demonstrate strength in the face of really quite massive escalation by the Israelis. And of course, it's not just the Israelis. The Americans took a massive escalatory step when they used 85 targets just a month or two back against Iran's principal strategic deterrence capabilities in the region. Iran, as everyone knows, does not have nuclear weapons, and there is no strong evidence that they are pursuing nuclear weapons themselves, although I think there is the capability there that is developing, but they have other deterrent capabilities, and the most important are forces across the region. And if the US attacks those forces directly, it is as if another country would be attacking the nuclear weapon capabilities of a nuclear armed state. This is deeply irresponsible behavior by the Americans and by the Israelis, and I am less positive and optimistic about the outcomes of these conflicts than your other colleague. I feel very worried.
Right. And, well, perhaps the man at the center of this, President Joe Biden, he's told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that future U.S. support for the Gaza genocide depends on new steps to protect civilians and aid workers. Biden and Netanyahu spoke by phone days after Israeli airstrikes killed 7 food aid workers inside Gaza and added a new layer of complication in the leaders' increasingly strained relationship. Here's National Security Spokesperson John Kirby briefing reporters on Washington's position.
Obviously a busy day here. I do want to take a moment just at the start. The president had a chance to speak with Prime Minister Netanyahu earlier today. On that phone call, the president emphasized that the strikes on humanitarian workers and the overall humanitarian situation in Gaza are unacceptable. He made clear the need for Israel to announce and to implement a series of specific, concrete, and measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers. He made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. He underscored that an immediate ceasefire is essential to stabilize and improve the humanitarian situation and to protect innocent civilians. And he urged the Prime Minister to empower his negotiators to conclude a deal without delay to bring the hostages home.
John Kirby there, who might feel some kind of shame having to come out and trot out some of those comments day after day. Batul, anything you heard there made you feel more optimistic about America's position on this?
Absolutely. The Western support for Israel is conditional, I would argue. It's not unconditional. It's conditional on the basis that Israel is serving Western interests and not turning into a liability. What we're seeing right now is that Israel has not managed to secure a single military strategic objective on the ground. It's not managed through the war to release the hostages. It's not managed to weaken the Hezbollah resistance in any way, shape or form. The infrastructure is still very much intact. It's not managed to kill any resistant leader, so to speak. So ultimately, what cannot be achieved militarily, they will seek to achieve politically. This is America. Obviously, from the Israeli occupation entity's perspective, they want to create the most unbearable conditions in Gaza because they cannot accept the American two-state solution. Israel sees the American two-state solution as a recipe for another war and a suicide. Israel's strategy right now is ultimately creating the most unbearable conditions such that they can displace all of those in Gaza and find the final solution, so to speak. But from the American perspective, no. The American strategy is very cunning. They want the two-state solution. They want to bring a friendly face, like the PA, for example. And I believe I was reading a report by the Cradle Media today that was released, in which they were speaking about how Majid Faraj, who is like the spy agent of the PA, essentially, that plan for them to take over the security control over Gaza was thwarted recently, so to speak. So this is the American strategy. It is that the interests of the people of Gaza, from food to medicine to reconstruction to aid, that is all held in the hands of the Western-friendly entities like the UAE, like Jordan, like Egypt, like the PA. Through that, they wish to weaken the Gazan resistance, so to speak. So the American strategy is one in which it wants a ceasefire. It wants aid to enter Gaza, but it wants it on its terms. It wants it in a way that weakens.
That's so problematic at the moment. And Paul, you talked a little bit earlier there about actions and not just words. We're, of course, seeing that in the coming days, there'll be meetings in Egypt with the CIA director, William Burns, plus the head of Shin Bet and Mossad and so on. Is this another false start, another false dawn?
It's really difficult to stare into that crystal ball. I mean, I think that the Americans are losing their confidence, such as it was before. The Democrats are splitting up. This could well lose Joe Biden his election. I think that his patience is gone. It should have gone months ago, obviously, but it's astonishing that it's taken this long for the administration to step up. But I do think that the interests are divided, much as has been described. And I think that that Netanyahu's capability of holding this coalition government together is rapidly dwindling as the Americans put pressure on him. It's very difficult. There's so many different moving parts in this unfolding drama, and the people on the ground in Gaza are suffering hugely. And there's no sign I see at all of the Israelis doing anything significant to change that fact on the ground. So I think there is bound to be conflict between the Americans and the Israelis over the next few weeks.
Of course, I don't think too many of us are going to be sad if that relationship is dismantled. But we do know that Al-Quds Day processions calling for the liberation of Palestine have been taking place for the last 45 years. They have a different energy to them this year all around the world with that live genocide going on in Gaza. Now, London is hosting a large Quds Day rally, and this on the back of a massive pro-Palestinian movement that's seen people consistently demonstrating against the atrocities taking place over the past 6 months. We spoke with one of the pro-Palestinian activists about the power of such a movement.
Israel is now more isolated than it's ever been. If you look at the scale of the demonstrations in Britain, across Europe and America, it's put huge pressure onto our governments. All of them were huge backers of Israel. All of them now have major political problems in their own countries. My own view is that Israel hasn't gone into Rafah, partly because of the scale of the movement that we have established around the world. And our job is to make sure that we stay on the streets until this is finished, until they stop killing, until the genocide ends. And until that day, we have to stay on the streets. Britain and America, their geopolitical interests, I think, are for a strong Israel. They have always supported Israel. America has never abstained or voted against Israel in the UN. So, first of all, this week they did abstain. This is, okay, minimum in terms of its outcome, but very, very significant politically in terms of where that has taken us. But Britain and America have always used Israel as their watchdog state in the Middle East. They've always armed it. They've always supported it. They've always used it to intervene in neighbouring countries. So, of course, the state, the British state and the American state are fully behind Israel. But the majority of the population, both in Britain and in America, are now not. And this is creating a political crisis in Britain and America. And we'll see what happens in the elections in America and Britain. But both Conservative and Labour and Joe Biden in the States, I think, are in serious political trouble because of their failure to stand up against the genocide in Israel that Israel is perpetuating. There is now, over the last 6 weeks, there has been a growing movement of people who have put themselves forward in constituencies across Britain to stand as independents or with other smaller parties, but part of the broad coalition that we are calling No Ceasefire, No Vote. So there are a lot of places where there will be Labour and Conservative politicians who will be challenged. Now, we won't win in many, many seats, but we can give some sitting MPs a real bloody nose. And this is just the start of our movement, and we have to, you know, pull together, see where we get to, and think about what kind of alternatives we can establish to the main two parties.
The chief of World Central Kitchen partner charity, INERA, that stands for the American Near East Refugee Aid, is demanding an independent investigation into the Israeli strike that killed WCK workers and others, other attack on aid workers. The charity group, a partner of World Central Kitchen, was founded in 1967, and they've had operations inside Gaza City for 40 years. Currently, a staff of 12 Palestinians help to deliver an estimated 150,000 meals daily inside Gaza. Several other humanitarian aid organizations have suspended operations in Gaza after Israeli airstrikes killed seven of the World Central Kitchen workers.
And the World Central Kitchen killing, for the first time, our staff in Gaza said, we have to pause, we can't keep going. And I think part of it was the shock of losing colleagues and friends, and of course it was also how can we operate if no one is safe. And they've never been safe these past 6 months fully. We had bullets come through the windows of a shelter that they had previously felt relatively safe in. We of course had the killing of Musa Shawa and his son, who died 10 days later from injuries. And we've had at least three of our staff have had near misses as they're out and about delivering their aid. And I think a lot of international NGOs, including World Central Kitchen, have more than one incident, more than one story. And most of the time, it is indeed very difficult to determine whether there was any targeting or it was just wrong place at the wrong time. But there are far too many of those. There shouldn't be so much hesitation in asking for an independent investigation. I would imagine that all of the countries whose nationals were killed in this attack would demand independent investigations. And I think for the U.S., at least, that should include an investigation of were the weapons that killed these humanitarian aid workers U.S. weapons? And there was a U.S. national killed. Was a U.S. national humanitarian aid worker killed by a U.S. weapon? I would think that Americans would want to know that.
Let's get the thoughts of Betul Sebeiti and Paul Ingram on what we've just heard in the few moments we have left on this edition of the show. Betul, we know that the attack on these World Central Kitchen workers, some might say disproportionately, has kind of steered the conversation because there was one Palestinian but six foreign nationals who were killed in this targeted attack. But we also are aware of the impact it's having globally. But inside Gaza, charities are saying, we don't feel safe, we can't continue. Was this Israel's intention all along? Like, if we show that we mean business here, might people just give up and not help the Gazans anymore?
Absolutely. Israel is almost now even rebelling against the West. It knows that even with regards to the West doesn't have their own interests at heart, so to speak, because ultimately the two-state solution, as I mentioned, is a suicide for Israel, and they know this very well. So what Israel was trying to prove through this attack is that we want to kill all life in Gaza. This is our intent, and we're going to make it walk our way. But the reality is that what the phone call yesterday between Biden and Netanyahu revealed is ultimately America is sitting in the driver's seat. America came forward and said, number one, two, three, we need a ceasefire. We need an exchange of the hostages. We need to start the political settlement and the two-state solution, whether you like it or not. What we have to understand is that Israel's existence is hinged upon America's support. America is the oxygen through which...
34,000 souls, Betul.
Absolutely. It's taken 34,000 souls, but ultimately Israel has failed. Israel has failed in its strategic objectives, which means if politics runs on power and ability, moving forward, if the resistance has the upper hand and Israel is weaker in its strategic positioning in the region, America's going to put them on the side. And America moving forward will even have to force itself to go into negotiations with the resistance axis because it cannot deny the power balance on the ground. And what it cannot achieve militarily, it will have to achieve politically, so to speak, if it wants anything in the region. We're seeing that the Houthis, the Ansarullahs, they're slipperless. You know, they don't even have slippers, but they're going and they're taking over American ships, for example. You know, the unprecedented changes since October the 7th, we're seeing October the 7th was a offensive resistance operation for the first time in the history of the occupation entity. And this shows us the course that we're going in.
Let me get some last thoughts from you, Paul, because, you know, the United Nations rights body, the Human Rights Council, they adopted that resolution earlier talking about Tel Aviv being held accountable for possible war crimes for what's going on inside Gaza. But we saw what happened with the South Africa case in a minute or so. Tell us why this might be any different, if at all.
I don't know that it will be different, and certainly it's not going to bring back those 35,000 innocent people who've lost their lives. I think it's desperately sad what's happening, and I don't think that the Israelis are going to let up anytime soon. And I think that there will be efforts made, diplomatic, politically, in all sorts of ways to try to put pressure on Israel, but I don't see that converting at this current point in time because Western governments have not been willing until this point to put the sort of pressure that would actually get results. And I haven't seen any evidence that that's going to change in the next few days. Clearly the pressure is on. And I think we saw just now some ideas about the way in which people are thinking about electoral pressure in the UK. Similar efforts are being made in the United States to ensure that Democrats and others pay in the elections. But of course, you know, when you have these very, very poor electoral systems where it's a real stretch to be talking about the United States and the UK and other countries as genuine democracies that are responsive to their citizens. I think that you're not going to see any significant foreign policy shift.
I was maybe hoping for a little bit of good news here, Paul, but I think we'll have to leave it with some reality, and that is what does it for us. Batul Subeti and Paul Ingram were a very special guest. Our thanks to them and, of course, to you for being with us. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن می کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
July 12, 1983. Place Hosseinia Jamaran, Tehran. When you read the Kumail supplication, when you recite the Shabaniya supplication and other supplications that have been received from the Immaculate Imams, may Allah's peace be upon them, you will notice that their language is not the ordinary language that we use. Whereas when we come to know of a theological theme, we think it is a great achievement. If we subjugate a country, we think something great has been achieved. If we achieve a spiritual status, we think we have reached to some great position. When one observes the words of those that attain those high positions, we notice helpless through and through. They are helpless, and they must also be. They shall not reach, and they will never reach. But the needy, the supplicate, have been commanded by Him Allah to supplicate, have been commanded by Him Allah to praise Him Allah. He commanded us to eulogize Him.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. About the holy month of Ramadan, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "With the coming of the holy month of Ramadan, the month of mercy, forgiveness and blessings, I beseech God the Exalted to make all of the Muslims more aware of their duties and responsibilities that the Creator of the worlds have given them. The responsibility of preserving the divine laws and acting upon the Holy Quran, which is the foundation of the revival of the honor and grandeur of Islam and the Muslims." Well, here Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is talking about the greatness of the month of Ramadan and the spiritual progress that one can have in this month. The world's religious and spiritual leaders highlighted the spiritual perspectives and depth of philosophy of divine fast during the holy month of Ramadan. The founder of the Islamic Republic maintained that the holy month of Ramadan is an opportunity for self-training and self-purification.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
Sallallahu alayhi,
salli
ala Rasul.
Allah,
Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, following the teachings of our Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, also used to advise devotees to spiritually prepare themselves to observe the night of power or Laylatul Qadr, which has great features. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh used to attach great significance to the holy month of Ramadan and cancelled all extra activities to devote himself for divine and spiritual activities. The spiritual leader used to spend the hours of this month to worship and mediate and considered the prayers as means of reaching to divine love. You see how this great character used to spend his time to worship God in this holy month, and he strongly advised the youth and people to do so, and that shows the significance of the mercy of Allah in this holy month and the way that Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh wanted the best for us, and that is why he recommended so strictly to us to just follow the instructions and worship and devote our time in this holy month and worship God in order to reach his mercy and high levels of spirituality. Thank you very much for being with us in this episode of Spring of the Truth, and until another one, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say La ilaha illallah.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
In the United States, prosecutors are saying Donald Trump stoked and encouraged the publicity he's now citing as a reason for delaying his hush money trial. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office told the judge it will be perverse to reward the defendant with an adjournment based on media attention that he's actively seeking. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. The American newspaper, the New York Daily News, has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump's efforts to delay his upcoming trial in the Stormy Daniels hush money case by arguing he's been hurt by publicity is hypocritical and should be rejected, Manhattan prosecutors wrote in a new court filings on Wednesday, 3rd of April. Asking Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan to deny the former president's eighth motion to delay the trial slated for 15th of April, based on media attention he's actively seeking, prosecutors said Donald Trump was trying to have his cake and eat it as well. He has repeatedly invited public attention to this criminal trial through campaign rallies, online social media posts, television interviews by himself and his counsel, and frequent press conferences, including in the very hallway of the courthouse, just steps away from the courtroom before and after court appearances, Assistant District Attorney Matthew Colangelo wrote. Defendants simply cannot have it both ways, complaining about the prejudicial effect of pretrial publicity whilst seeking to pollute the jury pool himself by making baseless and inflammatory accusations about his trial, specific witnesses, individual prosecutors, and the court itself. The presumptive Republican nominee has pleaded not guilty to 34 felonies in the case, alleging he covered up reimbursement to Michael Cohen to disguise that it was for a hush money scheme that included paying off the actress Stormy Daniels. In their 18th of March motion, Trump's lawyers posited that oversaturated media coverage had destroyed his chances of a fair trial, that it would be impossible to find an unbiased jury, and that anticipated witnesses for the district attorney, like Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen, had driven adverse media reports, among other arguments. President Trump has been unfairly and improperly demonized in this coverage, Trump lawyer Todd Blanche wrote. President Trump cannot get a fair trial in Manhattan County right now. Assistant District Attorney Colangelo countered that a survey by Trump's attorneys of 400 residents showing 88% of respondents had read about hush money payments surrounding the 2016 presidential election and 35% believed him guilty provided no background about how they obtained contact information or ensured samples were random, but did not prove Manhattanites couldn't be impartial. Donald Trump has doggedly fought to delay the case and failed in February to convince Judge Juan Merchan to push it back based on publicity. On Tuesday, 2nd of April, he renewed another argument that failed in August to force Judge Juan Merchan to recuse himself based on his daughter's consulting work on campaigns for Democrats. That came after Judge Merchan expanded a gag order to prohibit Donald Trump from attacking his and District Attorney Alvin Bragg's relatives when Trump targeted his daughter, Lauren Merchan, online, telling his followers she was a rabid Trump hater profiting from her dad's rulings. Assistant District Attorney Colangelo said that the insistence by Trump's lawyers to inject relatives into public filings was reckless and beyond the pale, given unprecedented security threats facing District Attorney Melvin Bragg, his family, and others as a result of Trump's dangerous rhetoric and persistent attacks. The District Attorney Alvin Bragg and Judge Juan Merchan have been subjected to death threats since Donald Trump was first indicted. The national broadcaster NBC News has also covered the same story. Prosecutors in New York on Wednesday, 3rd of April, urged a judge to reject Donald Trump's bid to delay his impending criminal trial because of pre-trial publicity, arguing the former president has constantly stoked and encouraged such publicity. Trump's own incessant rhetoric is generating significant publicity, and it would be perverse to reward the defendant with an adjournment based on media attention he's actively seeking, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office said. The court filing was in response to a request by Donald Trump's lawyers to delay the trial for the foreseeable future because of prejudicial publicity around the case. The defendant here has done much more than simply give occasional statements. Instead, he has repeatedly invited public attention to his criminal trial through campaign rallies, online social media posts, television interviews by himself and by his counsel, and frequent press conferences, including in the very hallway of the courthouse, just steps away from the courtroom, before and after court appearances. An attorney for Donald Trump did not immediately respond to NBC News' request for comment. Trump's attorneys contended in a court filing last month their client cannot get a fair trial in New York County right now because of the large amount of negative press coverage as well as repeated public statements by two key witnesses in the case, former Trump attorney Michael Cohen and film actress Stormy Daniels. Michael Cohen paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 in the closing days of the 2016 presidential election for her silence about her claims. Donald Trump has denied Stormy Daniels' claims, but prosecutors maintain he directed Michael Cohen to make the payment and then repaid him in disbursements that were falsely classified as legal expenses. Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty. Trump's court filing said Michael Cohen has and will continue to spew vitriol into public sphere regarding President Trump, and Stormy Daniels had made remarks critical of the president while a new documentary about her on NBC Universal's streaming platform Peacock includes her prejudicial false commentary about this case and President Trump. The district attorney's office said it has no real means of enforcing restrictions on the speech of Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels, who are private citizens. In any event, there is no indication that their public statements have materially affected the overall level of publicity attached to this case, especially compared to the extensive national press coverage of the defendant's own provocative remarks. Nor is there any reason to think that an adjournment would make a difference. The press is likely to seek comment from these individuals whenever a defendant's trial occurs, regardless of whether the trial begins on 15th of April or on a later date. Prosecutors also noted there will always be publicity swirling around this case. Because this trial is a criminal proceeding against a former president, the press attention will be substantial regardless of when, or for that matter where, this trial is held. The district attorney noted that the judge rejected a similar request by Donald Trump's lawyers back in February, and that there is no reason for him to change his position. They also told Judge Juan Merchan the effort is the eighth time that Donald Trump has moved to adjourn the trial, which is scheduled to begin jury selection in less than 2 weeks' time.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and youth, guided by the wisdom of the Holy Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, who is a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed some light on this important subject. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Salma. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
So we've been discussing a certain question in the past episodes, which was about what to expect from your teenage son and how to, you know, ensure proper training from a young age. And you gave us some very nice tips, and inshallah the listeners can go through them in the while listening to the previous episodes. And we reached on you know, avoiding idle talk, that it's very important to instill this characteristic that, you know, when you're seated together as a family, or when you're talking to your child, when you're talking even to your spouse, the children are watching you, they're hearing you. You know, you have to make sure you don't just talk useless things all the time. They have to know that there is some sort of substance in your
yes,
speech.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, by idle talk, even I mean any kind of idle amusement, lahu and la'ib, it's introduced in the Holy Quran,
yeah,
that you should stay away from those kind of things, that wastage of time, that don't give you any benefit in the long run. So you know what, the impact is a negative one. You get a negative impact. Your mind becomes tired. Your soul does not accept that. So teenager becomes then cranky and very angry, frustrated, depressed, all this anxiety, yeah, you know, when he over talks or over does something, even overplays a game. You see, even if it's a refreshing game like soccer, when he plays it too much, he gets very tired. And he, okay, that's a good sign if he gets tired, but then he would like it even, you know, in the yeah, end, that he when he overdoes something.
True.
So in the Holy Quran, we have in chapter 31, ayat number 6, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "And of the people is he who buys the amusement of speech to mislead others from the way of Allah without knowledge, and who takes it in ridicule, those will have a humiliating punishment." Why? Yeah. Allah is harsh in that. A humiliating punishment. That means Allah knows that this has such a negative impact on your soul. Because Allah doesn't want to punish you. He is Rahman and Rahim. He knows that you yourself will have laid out this for yourself. Such a, you know, like a anxiety will overwhelm you that you won't even feel like, you know, doing other things.
Just
properly.
Feel a little depressed. And this is exactly what the Western like propaganda is, that they want to kind of make you just waste time on watching thousands of movies or thousands of serials,
or Instagram, for example,
or Instagram,
whatever, wherever you go, wherever you land, whatever food you have.
Yeah, sometimes it's so easy to just go on scrolling Instagram for even hours, and then you suddenly feel like I could have done so much more.
Yes.
So many.
And it doesn't
things.
Even give you that peace in the long run. Yeah, so that's what is lahu and la'ib.
Yeah.
So any game even played with that I want to improve my concentration is not lahu and la'ib. But anything, even like for example, done for amusement, like going to the park, which seems like, you know, like playing a game or something, if it's done for refreshing yourself, giving yourself this time, it's not lahu and la'ib. But yet, if you, for example, you don't know why you're reading this book or watching this movie, you keep on and on doing it, and you're wasting your time. That's exactly what lahu and la'ib, or keeping on talking on the phone hours on end, you know, getting every detail. What's the use? Or to your spouse, details for what? It's all lahu and la'ib, I feel, you know.
So I think it's like
there's so much intelligent conversation that can go on between spouses.
Definitely.
Well, about people, what's going on in the world, what, you know, like we can do about it, or the program, the planning of their life ahead.
Very true. I think it's very important to like keep that balance. Yeah, very
yeah.
true. So we're just going to have a short break and we will continue shortly.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing about a very important characteristic to to instill in our children, and that was avoiding idle talk and wasting time as a whole, like overdoing amusing things, or like you said that there's ifrat and tafrit, you know?
Yeah.
Excessiveness or
negligence.
Yeah. So keeping that balance sometimes is difficult.
Yeah.
So you've been saying that the child becomes depressed and anxious and angry when they are, you know, they don't have anything to do, or they are doing something excessively which is not of benefit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So if the parents should set an example in such a way that the child should learn, there are certain quiet moments that they should have together. For example, like reading or watching some important program or news or something like that, and then they should discuss over the dinner table. Is something a time of bonding,
yeah,
that the purpose should be achieved of bonding. We should ask the daily activities, what went, what happened, have the light humor, reassure them that they are loved.
Yeah.
You know, they're supported. Ask them of how the day went, what needs they have, for example, what they require probably in some area, like, you know, for example, while growing up, you need so many things like clothes and stationery and things like that. So you can find them that out about them. All that has a purpose, see? But when you become purposeless, you talk about different things, fantasies, games, clothes, shop, materialism, what people are doing, and backbiting and fault finding,
yeah.
All this.
No substance.
Yeah, no substance in it. So all that arises, those kind of negative thoughts, negative emotions, and the repercussions are not good. The teenager will also become like that, will talk to his friends subconsciously because he has got this lesson, like the same way as the parents talk, although he won't, let out,
yeah.
He won't even show it, but he will talk the same way to his friends. He won't get that, that peace of mind, that peace of soul, that is so important.
Definitely.
So if the parent wants to raise a teenager like that, they should start even with talking substance, the way you say.
Yeah. So, do you have any other points to regarding this?
Yeah, no, not this subtopic, but I have another point of how to raise the teenager in such a way that they're expected to become pious leaders, inshallah, for society.
So, before you continue, we're just going to take a quick break and we'll continue shortly.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet ﷺ said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing a very important characteristic that we have to try and instill in our children, which was avoiding idle talk and wasting time. So, right. Sister Salma, you said you have another important point that you want to talk about. Please enlighten us.
Yeah. Another thing that the parents should be very careful about, and that even should be instilled in from a young age, so that the teenager doesn't find problems facing that aspect, is don't be attracted to worldly things.
Hmm.
You know, the world is very limited, it's very, fleeting, and it shows, the wrong thing. And we get attracted to it, and only to find out that it wasn't that pleasurable that it seemed. When we attain it, then the interest goes away. We want more. It's like that ocean that, the thirst that keeps on. It's drinking salty water, and the thirst never gets quenched. Okay, we know all these things, but how to inculcate that in the child? When a child wants something attractive, first of all, don't encourage him. If he needs it, buy it for him, but don't keep on buying those things for him. And make sure the way you dress him, feed him, all should not be like something that is so show-offy, like something that calls for attention, or for him to have a mark type of clothes or the best kind of food. We should be so simple in our lifestyle that the child doesn't entertain this kind of worldly materialism in his mind.
Yeah.
For example, unfortunately, I know of some people teenagers who are so much into clothes, and they can't wear apart from marked clothes with mark. They just can't wear, even if it be such a simple thing, but they can't wear. Who say the shoes even, they can't wear something like, if they're not marked shoes,
yeah.
The shoes of mark. So all these things are actually
brand, you mean?
Yeah, brand. All these things start at home. The parent buys the best kind of clothes. They want the children to dress the best way possible, thinking that they have the best, so why not give the best? Okay, there is a planning of Allah to give this wealth to a person so that they can also save and share also. And not, you know, like make the child be so, you know,
like make this seem as something so important.
So important and so like something that has to be that only. For example, some children can't do without having a certain kind of breakfast. They have to have a certain things in their table so that they can have breakfast or lunch or dinner. They can't eat certain foods. They can never eat simple foods. They have to have the best kind of things.
And regarding clothes, I remember there was a certain family who would only make their children wear branded clothes. So when we wanted to give them gifts, they nicely told us that, look, you won't get the clothes that we get. So,
that's so
just give us the money. The money
it's
for it.
It's too embarrassing. Yeah. For both the parties, it's embarrassing. So, like, even if, for example, even when you want to give such people, you think about it, it'll go waste, right?
Yeah.
So, what do you do? Like, this is the way that Allah loves, you know, تَخَفَفُ تَلْحَقُ. Lighten yourself and soar high. Soar
high. Be humble.
Yeah. And also, that qana'at, you know, that
contentment
is so important. That there's a hadith of Imam Ali that the richest is the one who is most content. And it's such a beautiful feeling to raise the children like that, yeah? Whatever you have, be content. Even if it's a simple bread or like a date, you know, we have at least what we want is that satisfaction and that energy we get from it, yeah?
And in fact, when you see the people today who are, for example, very well off and you see them very, you know, they're wearing very, like, simple clothing and all, that's kind of more attractive because you feel like, oh, they know what they have is, like, what is important is something else, not the zahir and the
well. So this is what the parents should inculcate. What is important is that other side of you, that is the soul. Not that body. The body is fleeting. And the body requires some needs that we make it like the goals. We don't make it as the means. We give so much importance to such kind of worldly things that it becomes the goal rather than the means. So all this is of course shown right from the beginning of training a child that how simple you are, the child will become that only. And this is a very important ayat in the Holy Quran. Allah mentions in Surah 31, ayat number 33, chapter 31, ayat number 33. O mankind, fear your Lord and fear a day when no father will avail his son, nor with a son will a son avail his father at all. Indeed, the promise of Allah is truth. So let not the worldly life delude you. You see, the worldly life is a delusion. You know, once it's over, even in like an old age, one doesn't attain that pleasure of anything, even food, clothes, nothing. So from a young age, if they inculcated this kind of behavior, that use, kulu washrabu, wala tusrifu, but don't do israf, don't go extravagance, you know. So all this is beautiful when child realizes that anywhere he can adjust, he can be content. But such people who have high expectations and they're so worldly, they can't adjust, but they have to have the best, you know, like an environment to live in. And if they, for example, fall in the hands of some other families, like for example, if they get married and they see other kinds of situations, they would just, you know, like resist. They wouldn't be able to continue and they will lose their form and, you know, their personality.
Very true. So, inshallah that, you know, we are all able to be such strong
simple people,
and simple people, inshallah. Thank you very much, Sister Salma, and inshallah we hope to hear from you in the next episode. God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Saint of the soil, from the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me the sound of the rain, from the battle and the victory. Daddy! olive tree, seeking peace, seeking peace.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinians say nearly 33,200 civilians have been killed in Israeli attacks since the regime began its genocidal